From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
News from around the world and across the nation right here on America's Radio News at 6 after the top of the hour. Here's some of the stories I'm following for you on this Wednesday morning.
I think the question's been asked the last few days of what if someone had a concealed firearm on them and could have stopped him.
Gun sales are up after the Colorado shooting.
That has been put to the test with the polling that they have done. And in some states, I take more votes away from Obama. In other states, I take more votes away from Romney. So it bears out what we've thought all along. I'm going to take equally from both sides, and then I'm going to take from a group in the middle that ordinarily don't vote.
There is a third candidate running for president.
After secret operational details of the Bin Laden raid were given to reporters, Secretary Gates walked into the West Wing and told the Obama team to shut up.
Mitt Romney wants some answers on national security leaks. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. A study of federal subsidies of various sectors of the economy. It says health care and housing combined to reap about $1 trillion in support in the most recent year for which data was available. The study funded by the Pew Charitable Trust said that taxpayers subsidized health care by $750 billion in 2010, and a generous set of tax breaks was the main driver in the $227 billion worth of subsidies for the housing industry. The Pew study said that various federal subsidies like tax breaks, federal grants, and other government contracts totaled $1.4 trillion. The group says $460 billion of the subsidies come as tax breaks like the mortgage interest deduction. Such breaks are called tax expenditures, which are defined as spending that's done through the tax code. By the way, that mortgage interest deduction has been discussed as being repealed by folks in Congress looking for new sources of revenue. James Holmes remains in solitary confinement in a Colorado jail as prosecutors build their case against him. A team of lawyers spent about 90 minutes inside the movie multiplex in Aurora, where he allegedly went on a deadly shooting rampage. Crews started setting up a chain-link fence around the building while people continued to flock to a memorial nearby for the victims. Survivors are offering new details about that night, saying the gunman stalked around the theater, shouting and appearing to target people. Holmes is accused of methodically stockpiling weapons and explosives at work and at home that police say he used to kill 12 people and wound 58 others at the theater. Families of the victims have begun preparing for funerals. The first one is today at 51. Gordon Cowden was the oldest of those killed at that theater. Aleppo, Syria's second largest city, is the setting of intense fighting this week as thousands of Syrian soldiers are being taken off their Turkey border post to join the battle against rebels there. President Bashar al-Assad's forces have avoided a rebel takeover of Damascus by diverting the violence to this other city, the first time fighting has hit either major city since turmoil began to stir in the country more than a year ago. Military helicopters have been reportedly bombing some parts of Damascus, despite the government apparently retaking control of the capital. The government's even deploying fighter jets over Aleppo, Syria's commercial center, for the first time since the violence began last year. Mitt Romney fired up yesterday over the national security leaks that have enveloped Washington in the last few weeks. Speaking to the VFW in Reno, he demanded answers from the administration.
After secret operational details of the Bin Laden raid were given to reporters, Secretary Gates walked into the West Wing and told the Obama team to shut up. And he added a colorful word for emphasis. Lives of American servicemen and women are at stake. But astonishingly, the administration failed to change its ways. More top secret operations were leaked, even some involving covert action going on in Iran. This isn't a partisan issue. It's a national security crisis. Just yesterday, Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, said, and I quote, "I think the White House has to understand that some of this is coming from their ranks. This conduct is contemptible. Whoever provided classified information to the media seeking political advantage for the administration must be exposed, dismissed, and punished. The time for stonewalling is over."
Well, when it comes to guns, perhaps the problem is with the Constitution. Filmmaker Michael Moore thinks that. On CNN with Piers Morgan last night, he suggested that perhaps the Second Amendment is just outdated.
This must seem odd to people in other countries, that we view our Constitution as if it was written by God himself, that it was somehow through some sort of divine intervention or whatever, was etched in stone like Moses in the tablets, and because what they thought was right in 1776 to 1789. That is the way we have to live today in the 21st century. I mean, we wouldn't go to a doctor and have them put leeches on us to suck the blood out of us because that would cure us. That's what they did, you know, 150 years ago. We kind of evolve. I wish we would just live in this century. I think they'd want us to do that. We've evolved in other ways. We allowed women to vote. We decided that slavery was a bad idea. You know, we've gotten rid of a lot of those bad ideas from the founding fathers.
Political tensions in the Middle East remain high in the wake of last week's bombing in Bulgaria that killed five Israelis. Israeli President Shimon Peres blames Iran and Hezbollah for the bombings and claims Iran's making an open war with Israel. In an interview with CNN, Mr. Peres explained Israel's political response to the bombing.
It's self-evident, look. The use of chemical weapons is internationally forbidden. You don't have the right to produce them. We ourselves signed this international law. You don't have the right to use them. And what do you do when somebody violates the law? You fight against it. You stop them. My lady, we are not in a shadow war. It's an open war of Iran against Israel. Israel is not threatening Iran. Iran is threatening Israel. It's not a war. It's an one-sided attack.
At the health desk on America's Radio News, here's Lori London.
The first person believed to have been cured of AIDS says reports he still has the HIV virus are false. Timothy Ray Brown, also known as the Berlin patient, says doctors have told him he is cured of AIDS and will remain cured. He had a blood stem cell transplant back in 2007 to treat leukemia using a donor with a rare gene mutation that provides natural resistance to HIV. Doctors then declared him cured soon after that, but researchers in California are finding traces recently of HIV in his tissues. Brown says any remnants of the virus still in his body are dead and can't replicate. In his first time addressing the media here in the U.S., Brown, looking frail but energetic, announcing the formation of a new AIDS foundation in his name. For America's Radio News, I'm Lori London.
Coming up on America's Radio News, a woman facing charges for sending fake anthrax letters to a couple of senators, another military member killed in Afghanistan, and the New York Police Department. Yeah, that spying scandal. They were spying on Muslims in New Jersey. It turns out they were outed by a building superintendent who found an apartment that seemed oddly furnished. We'll talk about it coming up. From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast, this is America's Radio News.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need is right here on America's Radio News. 20 minutes after the top of the hour, this is Ernie Brown. The House has barred the Labor Secretary from imposing new safety rules for children working on farms, putting a legal stamp on a Labor Department decision to put off action on the rules. The Labor Department last April withdrew the proposed safety rules after being hit with a storm of protests from farm groups who said they would have prevented young people from working on family-run farms. The department added the rules would not be pursued for the duration of the Obama administration, but bill sponsored Representative Tom Latham, an Iowa Republican, said that even with that assurance, legislation was needed to make sure that federal bureaucrats would not carry through with what he called a misguided regulatory attempt to prohibit children from working on family farms. Police in Anaheim, California have restored order after violent protests over the weekend police shootings that caused injuries and two dozen arrests. As many as 500 protesters and 250 police were involved in a fourth night of violence last night. 7 hours of confrontations ended about 2 o'clock this morning. Sergeant Bob Dunn said an initially peaceful protest evolved into clusters of people who threw rocks at police, lit trash can fires, and threw a Molotov cocktail at a police car and smashed windows and businesses. Police used beanbag rounds and pepper balls. Dunn said about 20 adults and 4 minors were arrested. He said a police officer, 2 members of the media, and some protesters were injured, but nobody was hospitalized. A Detroit area woman who collected welfare despite winning a $735,000 lottery prize has been sentenced to probation. Attorney Todd Flood said Amanda Clayton has repaid the $5,500 in food aid and medical benefits. The 24-year-old pleaded no contest to fraud last month and was placed on probation yesterday for 9 months. The Michigan Department of Human Services said Clayton did not inform the state about her pre-tax lottery windfall of $735,000 last year. Flood said Clayton did make an attempt but decided not to fight the case and just move on with her life. Governor Rick Snyder signed a law in April that requires lottery officials to tell the Department of Human Services about new winners. And this one, too, from California. The Los Angeles City Council has voted to ban hundreds of medical marijuana dispensaries that have cropped up around the city. The city council voted to get rid of the nation's second largest city of pot clinics that some residents say have been a blight on neighborhoods. City officials estimate there could be more than 900 collectives that are open right now. Many cities have struggled with medical marijuana ordinances, but none has had a bigger problem than Los Angeles, where pot shops have proliferated. At one point, the city ordered closure of the shops, a process that failed amid lawsuits and conflicting rulings by appellate courts. The so-called gentle ban, it eliminates storefronts but allows patients and caregivers to grow medical marijuana. Well, Congressman Jason Chaffetz did battle with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News over the issue of gun purchasing. Here's a little bit of that.
If the FBI is alerted that somebody's buying 60,000 heavy-duty rounds, they're going to check it out because that's what anti-terrorism is. That's what they do.
Bill, that's why we have the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We have a specially designated law enforcement officer
that kid's purchase on the internet wasn't reported to any federal agency. That's why he was able to assemble that armor that he had. And you're telling me you object to this? This doesn't intrude on any hunter, anybody with a handgun to protect himself.
This is the Second Amendment. You have a lawful and reasonable right to be able to go out and purchase
weapons and ammunition. I'm not saying you can't purchase. Report the purchase in case it's a terrorist.
But Bill, you're ignoring the current law in the books. You're coming up with this wild definition of what is so-called heavy armament.
An AK-47?
Yes, you are.
That's not heavy armor? An AK?
There are rules, but there are laws in the books. You act as
there
if you can...
There aren't any federal laws on the books
there
to report
that.
There
are laws on the books.
No,
you are misinformed.
There are seven states
totally
that require... No, you're wrong.
Yes,
there are seven
are.
States that require if you buy an AK and 43 that don't. Come on!
Congressman Charlie Rangel, Democrat of New York, lamenting the coming lame duck Congress. He's blaming Republicans for not wanting to get anything done before the next recess. Here he is on MSNBC.
The Republican leadership has decided that they're not going to do anything until after the election. They've made it abundantly clear the question of the farm bill, the taxes, the question of food stamps, the uncertainty that we have in our country and the world. The Congress has taken off for 5 weeks, and the only thing that's going to stop that will not be Democrats screaming that the Republicans are irresponsible. It will take the American people to come forward and demand that their Congress stay here and work and get these things done. The whole idea is to cause embarrassment to the president. And I've reached the unfortunate conclusion that even if the ship of state, the United States of America, is going to suffer fiscally as long as it embarrasses the president, for this election, they're prepared to do it. I saw that with the debt ceiling. I'm seeing it now with the tax bill. And so Americans are going to have to just step up to the plate and demand more of us than just saying that it's going to be embarrassing. It's going to cost people's lives. That's what's going to happen.
And then on Fox News, Senator Ron Johnson teaming up with Senator DeMint and Graham to warn of that lame duck looting session that's coming in Washington. He said a looting of the American taxpayer if Congress doesn't get some kind of budget solution done, even if it's just a temporary one.
What we're really concerned about is Senator Harry Reid, his Senate hasn't passed a budget now in over 3 years. They haven't brought any appropriation bills to the floor. So the fiscal year ends on September 30th. We have to fund the government. And, of course, what they're going to want to do is create a scenario where, you know, they want to threaten a government shutdown so they can pass this big old pork-filled omnibus spending bill, throw every appropriations bill into one great big package, thousands of pages long, and that's where the taxpayer of America really gets raked over the coals. Why would the Democrats want to threaten a government shutdown? I have no idea. I don't know why Patty Murray's talking the way she is about taking this country, our economy, off the fiscal cliff. Give a responsible leader, a responsible Congress, a chance to get into office in the next administration and start putting our fiscal house in order.
Opening numbers on Wall Street coming up in just a few minutes. Market opens in about 4 minutes or so. Some disappointing numbers coming from a number of companies as they're reporting earnings right now. So their futures are mixed at best today. On the way, the Congressional Budget Office says the health care ruling could save money, but the reasons are rather interesting. Also, Christian Bale visiting some of the shooting victims in Colorado. He's the actor who played Batman. And gun sales in Colorado, they've gone up in the wake of that theater shooting. Plus, the New Orleans Police Department getting a makeover. Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need is right here on America's Radio News. Journalism without agenda.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast on America's Radio News, this is Ernie Brown. A good Wednesday morning to you. It's July 25th. Here are some of the stories I'm following for you so far today.
I think the question's been asked the last few days of what if someone had a concealed firearm on them and could have stopped him.
Gun sales are up after the Colorado shooting.
That has been put to the test with the polling that they have done. And in some states, I take more votes away from Obama. In other states, I take more votes away from Romney. So it bears out what we've thought all along. I'm going to take equally from both sides, and then I'm going to take from a group in the middle that ordinarily don't vote.
There is a third candidate running for president.
After secret operational details of the Bin Laden raid were given to reporters, Secretary Gates walked into the West Wing and told the Obama team to shut up.
Mitt Romney wants some answers on national security leaks. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Well, we start on Wall Street. Consumers apparently buying cheaper Apple products. That's a disappointment for investors who thought the company would be boosting profits again and revenues at the previous breakneck pace. Well, yesterday, Apple revealed that both revenue and net income posted increases of just over 20%. Now, that's cause for celebration in most companies, but not very good by Apple standards. The growth was the slowest in more than 2 years, and it didn't meet analyst expectations. It wasn't so much the volume of sales that disappointed. Apple sold 17 million iPads in the April through June period, beating expectations, and they also sold 26 million iPhones at the low end of expectations. But Apple's average selling price for the gadgets declined to levels last seen in 2010 for the iPhone and the lowest levels ever in case of the iPad. The reason? People are buying the lower-end gadgets. They're buying the iPad 2 instead of the newer one. As a consequence to all this, Apple shares fell about 5% in after-hours trading, although it's recovered a little bit. That was about a $31 hit. They're up about $7 today, but still down from their price yesterday. The nation's governors are asking Congress to help states recover an estimated $20 billion in sales taxes that go uncollected by out-of-state online merchants every year. Tennessee Governor James Haslam told the House Judiciary Committee yesterday it's not fair to local businesses to exempt online purchases from state sales taxes. Haslam said affordable computer software now makes it easy for even the smallest merchants to collect and forward sales taxes. Other Republican governors like Chris Christie of New Jersey have endorsed a bill to make out-of-state internet merchants charge and collect state taxes. The executive director of NetChoice, a coalition of e-commerce companies, says the bill doesn't simplify the process of collecting and distributing taxes enough to avoid imposing a big burden on small businesses. And firearm sales are surging in the wake of the Colorado movie theater massacre, buyers expressing fears that anti-gun politicians may use the shootings to seek new restrictions on owning weapons. In Colorado, the site of Friday's shooting that killed 12 and injured dozens of others, gun sales jumped in the 3 days that followed. Numbers also show a bump in places like Florida, Oregon, California, and Seattle's home county of King. Shop owners say customers are concerned that lawmakers might try to push through an anti-gun agenda in response to the shooting, which killed 12 people and wounded dozens of others. Others are interested in making sure they're able to protect themselves if they were ever in a similar situation. Well, joining us to talk a little bit about this and other things, as always, Rick Robinson, contributor at the Daily Caller, and his latest political thriller, Writ of Mandamus. You can find that on Amazon.com. Hello, Rick.
Good morning, Ernie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. You're surprised to hear that people are buying guns at a faster clip over the last few days?
Not really. If you take a look at any time these incidents happen across the country, what you see, you always see an uptick in people buying additional firearms or buying firearms. It's always interesting to me to see everybody taking their own political side and why this is happening.
Why do you think they do that?
Well, I think everybody likes to speculate as to what other people's motives are in these situations. And unfortunately, everybody wants to make political hay out of horrible, horrible incidents like this. And so, you know, whether people are buying additional firearms because they're worried about their own personal protection, or whether they're worried about certain firearms that might be banned by Congress sometime later in the year, mm-hmm. it's something that everybody wants to use for their own political agenda at the time.
Do you see anything coming of this on a political basis?
I think what is interesting right now that I found was how everybody has kind of backed off and not jumped into the on the political side. Now, it's talked about, you know, banning any particular weapons. Now, you've had certainly commentators talking about it, but if you look at the lawmakers and you look at people that are on the ballot, nobody has really taken the lead and said it's time to ban this weapon or that weapon or time to have some sort of control out there. It really has been a different kind of response from elected officials.
Yeah, it really has been. As I've watched this, because I anticipated there'd be a lot more discussion, what I see are the commentator, the pundit class, if you will, trying to stir something up with it, and marginal politicians, names that you probably don't even know or never have heard of, trying to make hay out of it. But for the most part, the folks that you're aware of, at least in the political class, they haven't really done much with it.
They really haven't. And it's been something that I think that the nature of it has been so horrible that no one wants to jump out there. I think the other thing that people are waiting on is that nobody wants to jump on it because nobody knows right now what this guy's motivation was.
Yeah.
They're very concerned about making some sort of a political statement and then finding out, oops, this guy was one of my group. Whether this guy reacted because, you know, whatever this guy reacted from, if it was some sort of political motivation along the way, mm-hmm. everybody's waiting to see whether they have to disavow him or not.
Let me ask you what the shooter's his future looks like in the legal system.
Well, I hope his future looks very dim. I think what is going to be interesting is they're going to obviously try to go after some sort of an insanity defense with regards to this. What will become interesting is I think it's going to be harder to plan the insanity defense when you take a look at the level of intricate planning that went into the nature of the act itself. You know, looking at an act like this, you look at it and say, oh my gosh, that is just absolutely insane. And it is.
Yeah.
What it may not give a rise to, though, is the legal definition of the person that being insane himself, whether there's an insanity defense that's available to him. I think it's going to be very hard to prove with the nature and the level of what we know so far anyway, the planning that went into it. And we're talking about somebody who is not that we have seen so far any level of diagnosed schizophrenia, anything of that nature. So I think and hope his future looks very, very dim.
Do you think there might be, I know Colorado does have the death penalty. Do you think this might be a death penalty case?
I certainly think it will be a death penalty case. And as you take a look at it, I would hope, Ernie, that the prosecutor makes sure that she has the requisite nature for a death penalty case under the law and isn't pressured into it by outside political pressures.
Yeah.
A lot of times you see some of these cases fail, these big high-profile cases fail because the prosecutor being pressured into putting on a case that they don't have the evidence for.
Yeah.
If they, in fact, have the evidence for this and it looks everything like they do so far in the premeditation of it, I would hope she would press for it, but I hope she would make an independent decision based on that and not being pressured into it politically. That's where you end up with bad outcomes.
Rick Robinson, contributor at the Daily Caller. His latest book, Writ of Mandamus, you'll find it at Amazon.com. Rick, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Talk to you next week, Ernie.
All right. On Wall Street right now, the Dow is up 97 points. NASDAQ up about 4. S&P 500 up about 5 points or so. A surprise, too, for the opening numbers because the pre-numbers were mixed before the market opened. Coming up on the program, that $60 million fine against Penn State is going to be used for a good cause, they say. Also, the Senate having another symbolic vote on taxes. Once again, nothing getting accomplished. And a new program being launched to help troops readjust to civilian life. We'll tell you about that coming up as well. Covering the United States and the world, this is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News. And always informative. This is America's Radio News.
Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need is right here on America's Radio News. It's 11 before the top of the hour. This is Ernie Brown. A couple of names that you know and faces that you know from the past have passed on. Sherman Hemsley, the actor who made the character George Jefferson so memorable of the TV show The Jeffersons and All in the Family. He was a very memorable character. He was 74 years old. He passed away yesterday. Police in El Paso, Texas, said that he was found dead at his home. The cause of death pending. He was born in Philadelphia. He played the businessman on All in the Family before he was spun off onto the Jeffersons, in which 11 seasons that show ran. Made him a very successful performer. Also, Chad Everett passed away. You remember the TV show Medical Center. He went on to appear in such films like Mulholland Drive, Melrose Place. He passed away. He was 75 years old. You saw him on pretty much everything in the 1970s and the early 1980s on television. He was married to actress Shelby Grant for 45 years until her death last year. He leaves behind a couple of daughters and six grandchildren as well. So Chad Everett, Sherman Hemsley, both gone now. The NCAA's unprecedented $60 million fine against Penn State will hurt the university in its wallet. The silver lining is it'll help plenty of abused kids and could wind up preventing abuse if it's distributed carefully. Child welfare advocates are saying this. As a part of the punishment over the Jerry Sandusky scandal, Penn State agreed Monday to pay $12 million a year for the next 5 years and to an endowment to fund programs for the detection, prevention, and treatment of child abuse. Penn State and the NCAA have not settled on the procedure by which the money will be given out just yet, but for nonprofit organizations living hand-to-mouth after years of cutbacks, the cash could have a very big impact for them. Batman star Christian Bale is in Colorado visiting victims of the shooting at a theater showing The Dark Knight Rises. A Warner Brothers spokesman told the Denver Post Bale is representing himself, not the movie studio. Carrie Rotman, one of the 58 people injured in the shooting, posted two photos of himself with Bale on his Facebook page. Hospital staff also posted a Facebook photo of Bale with some of the staff members. There's been an online campaign urging him to visit the victims of the shooting, which also killed 12 people. Some of the survivors have received visits from President Barack Obama and members of the Denver Broncos as well. The man accused of murder in the death of a six-year-old New York City boy who went missing back in 1979 has been transferred to a detention center. Pedro Hernandez was transferred to the Manhattan Detention Complex just a couple of days ago. He'd previously been held at Bellevue Hospital Center's psychiatric ward but was moved to Rikers Island. Prosecutors say the 51-year-old admitted 2 months ago to killing Aiton Pates in a surprising confession in one of the most baffling missing children's cases nationwide. Hernandez being held without bail, his attorney said his client was bipolar and schizophrenic and had a history of hallucinations. Hernandez was hospitalized after making comments about wanting to kill himself. His next court date not coming up until October 1st. And a study of federal subsidies of various sectors of the economy says that health care and housing combined to reap about $1 trillion in support in the most recent year for which data was available. The study funded by the Pew Charitable Trust said that taxpayers subsidized health care by about $750 billion in 2010, while a set of generous tax breaks was the main driver in the $227 billion worth of subsidies for the housing industry. The Pew study said that the various federal subsidies, like tax breaks, federal grants, and other government contracts, totaled about $1.4 trillion. By the way, one of the things that the group said was important, one of the subsidies, was the mortgage interest deduction, something that's been discussed in Congress. They've been talking about doing away with that to bring in more revenue. America would be a lot better off today with Hillary Clinton as president, or so says former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who thinks there's a chance that she might run for president again next time around. Here's what he told the Politico.
All through 7 and 8, I thought she'd be the nominee. I've worked with her on military affairs. I've worked with her on health issues.
And you said you preferred her.
She's very smart. Oh, yeah. The country would be better off today if she was the president than with Obama, because she's at least in touch with reality, and she's not a hard left ideologue. I saw one poll recently that showed her ahead like by 62-9 over Biden.
And did that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's inside the Democratic Party. I mean, I think what she and Bill would have to decide is, and they'd have at least two full years to decide it, you know, do they want to go back into the arena again? If they do, she remains and her husband remains, the Clintons as a couple. I think, despite Obama's temporary moment, I think remain the most impressive Democrats in the country for a generation.
Mitt Romney's critics have characterized his Iran policy as a march to war, but former RNC chairman Michael Steele says Mitt's foreign policy is a little more complex than that. Here he is on MSNBC's Hardball.
Now he's trumpeting like a bugle boy going into war with Iran.
No, what
is this? This is like a Pez dispenser. Every time we elect a Republican, he's got a war in mind.
No,
why does he have wars in mind?
Stop it.
Because your guys are pushing war here.
He's not pushing war. You're being absolutely ridiculous right now.
Tell me what he's talking about if it's not war.
The fact of the matter is he's laying out a very strong view for himself and for others that this is the new reality that we've got to deal with. It as president of the United States, he's prepared. Yes, you know, the peace through strength, we can sit down at the table, but he's also prepared to make sure that our allies know we stand firmly with them, Israel, and that our enemies know that we're not going to sit down and just, you know, have a face-to-face and do kumbaya. And I think that that's, at this stage, very, very important for him to do.
So if Israel wants to go to war with Iran, we should go along with them.
No, why are you making that leap, Chris?
Because that's what he's saying.
No one's talking about going to war. Just because I sit down and set out a strong foreign policy doesn't mean my next move is war.
Boxing used to be the only sport that didn't allow females to compete at the Olympics, but at the London Olympics this year, that's going to change. The glass ceiling for female boxers has been broken. At the 2012 Olympics, female boxers like Marlon Esparza can compete for the first time in history. The Latina lady boxers received endorsements from large companies like Coca-Cola, Nike, and CoverGirl. Esparza, the first American female boxer to qualify for the Games. In an interview with CNN, she shared her excitement for the upcoming Games.
When you beat somebody in the ring, you're not just beating them up or something. You're like beating the entire symbolism of them. You're beating who they are. This is my life and this is what I do. Like, and I can honestly say, like, this is who I am. Like right here, you're with it, you see it, this is what I do.
The Olympics is a goal, big goal.
Yeah, it's huge. It's probably, I honestly truly feel like if I go to the Olympics and medal, that I could probably be totally happy for the rest of my life. Yeah, like completely happy. The Mexicans are totally going to love it. They're going to freak when it happens. I think, like, the atmosphere and the energy is just going to be, like, something I've never felt. And I think that's one of the main things that I'm kind of looking forward to. I think that's really going to put me over the top and ready to compete.
Standing by at the international desk, here's Mike Hennessy.
The torch stopped just long enough at Wimbledon to allow tennis stars Andy Murray and Venus Williams to pose for pictures with it. After that, actor Sir Patrick Stewart took a turn on the relay run. Stewart is perhaps best known to millions of Star Trek fans as Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Federation Starship Enterprise. The torch relay is winding down its 7-day journey to the Olympic Stadium in advance of Friday's opening ceremonies. For America's Radio News, I'm Mike Hennessy.
Coming up on America's Radio News, disputes between the U.S. and Mexico over the border fence, the Colorado shooter remaining in solitary confinement, and involvement in internet poker in Costa Rica turns out to be rather costly for one U.S. citizen when he comes home. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 55, the NASDAQ down about 4.5, S&P 500 up about half a point right now. News from around the world and across the nation on America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News. From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here. right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
Well, if it's important to you, it's important to us. Coast to coast on America's Radio News. I appreciate you joining me. It's July 25th. It's a Wednesday morning. Here are some of the stories that I'm looking at for you so far today.
This is the Second Amendment. You have a lawful and reasonable right to be able to go out and purchase weapons.
The key is
ammunition.
I'm not saying you can't purchase. Purchase
if
in case
buying,
it's a terrorist.
But Bill,
arguments over gun control begin to heat up.
I know Los Angeles is a compassionate city. And I know the intelligence and the leadership can do a better job at leading.
Medical marijuana clinics are facing closure in Los Angeles.
I think people are concerned that they can't even go to a movie without possibly being in fear of their life.
Gun sales are up after the Colorado shooting. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. The Senate is ready for a tax cut showdown that's all about Democrats and Republicans showing voters the differences over taxing the well-off and blaming the other side for threatening to push government off a fiscal cliff. Senators plan to vote on a $250 billion Democratic measure to extend expiring tax cuts next year for all but the highest earners. Democrats need 60 votes to advance the proposal. They don't have them. It seemed unlikely there would be a separate vote on a GOP bill that would extend everybody's tax cuts, which also would lose. If the two sides don't compromise, $600 billion in tax increases and spending cuts for 2013 would be triggered, the so-called fiscal cliff, which analysts say would jar the weak economy. Police in Anaheim, California have restored order after violent protests over weekend police shootings that caused injuries and 24 arrests. As many as 500 protesters and 250 police were involved in a fourth night of violence last night. 7 hours of confrontations ended about 2 o'clock this morning. Sergeant Bob Dunn said an initially peaceful protest evolved into clusters of people who threw rocks at police, lit trash can fires, threw a Molotov cocktail at a police car, and smashed windows and businesses. Police used beanbag rounds and pepper balls. Dunn said about 20 adults and 4 minors were arrested. He said a police officer, 2 members of the media, and some protesters were injured, but nobody went to the hospital. A new program being launched to train thousands of social workers on how to aid troops coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. First Lady Michelle Obama's Joining Forces campaign said the training will help workers spot problems such as post-traumatic stress disorder and substance abuse and the danger signs for homelessness and suicide. Mrs. Obama's partner in the campaign, Jill Biden, the vice president's wife, said social workers are uniquely positioned to help vets and military families. The program, being run by a leading union, includes online courses and new standards and credentialing. Being offered to 650,000 social workers nationwide. Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma, is weighing in on President Obama's famous "you didn't build that" remark about small businesses. At CNBC, he offered up his diagnosis.
I was involved in a business startup from 1969 to 1978. The government was anything but a help to me. Actually, they were an impediment as I built that business into a $70 million business. And that was, you know, through hard work of a lot of people, including my hourly employees, who strived every day to make a quality product at a good price and service it well. So I think it just shows the disconnect. It was a slip. He didn't mean to say that, but, you know, obviously the reverberations of that is basically what a lot of people feel is it's a government-centric rather than a freedom-centric, a free enterprise, a capitalistic-centric system. The proof of the pudding is the only thing that has really brought masses and thousands and millions of people up and out of poverty is capitalism and the free enterprise system. It's not government-run totalitarian socialistic systems. And what he was touting was government dominance rather than individual freedom and liberty and rising to the highest level you can.
Michael Moore, the director of 2002's Bowling for Columbine, now speaking out again in favor of gun control on the heels of the Colorado massacre. He was on Piers Morgan's show on CNN last night.
The president has to be the leader on this. When he brought his own children into it, when he said, you know, my 2 daughters go to the movies, and what if it were them? Well, I guess if President Obama is watching right now, and I say this with all due respect, what if it were them? What if it were them? Would you stand at the microphone the next day and say, I feel your pain, and the existing gun laws, this is what he said, the existing laws are enough. Is that really what you'd say, Mr. President? We have to see that we're part of each other. The reason why they have universal health care in Canada and Britain, these other places, is because they believe if one suffers, everybody suffers. That is not our mentality. Our mentality is, I got mine, you get yours, and to hell with everybody else. Hell, at least I wasn't in that theater. You know, I mean, that is we have to stop this. And I am not going to come on another damn TV show either after the next one of these shootings, Pierce, because I haven't done it for 10 years. I'm sick of this. I refuse it. I refuse to live in a country like this, as I said and before. I'm not leaving. So therefore, what am I going to do? It's got to change.
Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney went on the attack yesterday, slamming President Obama for gutting the Defense Department. Here's what he had to say at the VFW.
This is no time for the president's radical cuts in our military. Look around the world. Other major powers are rapidly adding to their military capabilities, some with intentions very different than our own. The regime in Tehran is drawing closer to developing a nuclear weapon. The threat of radical Islamic terrorism persists. The threat of weapons of mass destruction proliferation is ever present, and we're still at war. And still have uniformed men and women in conflict. All this and more is going on in the world, and yet the president has chosen this moment for wholesale reductions in the nation's military capacity. When the biggest announcement in the last State of the Union address on improving our military was that the Pentagon will start using more clean energy, then you know it's time for a change.
Lori London standing by now at the health desk on America's Radio News.
The first person believed to have been cured of AIDS says reports he still has the HIV virus are false. Timothy Ray Brown, also known as the Berlin Patient, says doctors have told him he is cured of AIDS and will remain cured. He had a blood stem cell transplant back in 2007 to treat leukemia using a donor with a rare gene mutation that provides natural resistance to HIV. Doctors then declared him cured soon after that, but researchers in California are finding traces recently of HIV in his tissues. Brown says any remnants of the virus still in his body are dead and can't replicate. In his first time addressing the media here in the U.S., Brown, looking frail but energetic, announcing the formation of a new AIDS foundation in his name. For America's Radio News, I'm Lori London.
Coming up on America's Radio News, we'll talk about those internet sales taxes governors are trying to get the feds to help them collect. Also, a new program being launched to help troops readjust to civilian life. More details about that just now coming out. And Christian Bale visiting some of the shooting victims in Colorado. From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast, this is America's Radio News.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News. Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
And this is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News. It's 19 after the top of the hour. An agency that monitors the U.S.-Mexico boundary is agreeing to a U.S. proposal to build a border fence, the segments in a South Texas floodplain. That's a move that Mexico opposes. The decision by the U.S. International Boundary and Water Commission comes despite objections from its counterpart, Mexican agency. Mexico argues the fence would deflect floodwaters to its side of the Rio Grande and violate a binational treaty. Media sources obtained a letter the commission sent to U.S. Customs and Border Protection noting that it won't oppose the project. The commission says its analysis found the fence proposed for three areas in South Texas would not be a significant obstruction to river waters. A U.S. Customs and Border Protection spokesperson said more funding is needed to build the fencing, though. A report by the Congressional Budget Office said the Supreme Court's ruling on the president's health care law could mean 3 million fewer people will have insurance than originally predicted. Of the 33 million people who have been expected to gain coverage under the law, the CBO said 3 million fewer would get insurance since the court said the large expansion of Medicare originally envisioned would be a state option, not a federal requirement. While it's not clear how many states will opt out of the expansion, the CBO said about 6 million fewer people will be covered under Medicaid, although half of those will probably be eligible for insurance through private companies. Meanwhile, the CBO said the health care ruling would save the federal government about $84 billion over the next 11 years because of the states that would opt out. The nation's governors are asking Congress to help states recover an estimated $20 billion in sales tax that go uncollected by out-of-state online merchants every year. Tennessee Governor James Haslam told the House Judiciary Committee that it's not fair to local businesses to exempt online purchases from state sales taxes. Haslam said affordable computer software now makes it easy for even the smallest merchants to collect and forward sales taxes. Other Republican governors, such as Chris Christie of New Jersey, they've endorsed a bill to make out-of-state Internet merchants charge and collect state taxes. The executive director of NetChoice, a coalition of e-commerce companies, said the bill does not simplify the process of collecting and distributing taxes enough to avoid imposing a burden on small businesses. Scott Peterson joins us, the executive director of Streamline Sales Tax Governing Board. He's here to talk about what can be done regarding online sales taxes. Scott, welcome to the program. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, yeah, is this an issue of a lot of uncollected money, or is this just a mechanism we want in place so eventually it'll be a lot of money collected?
As a percentage of total tax collections today, it's not a very large percentage. Mm-hmm. But the issue is one of how consumers are changing their shopping habits. And as you and I and our children shop more and more online, and we buy more and more things with our smartphones or whatever, the ability of a sales tax to function in the 21st century has to include something like this. Otherwise, the sales tax just will stop functioning.
You know, it's interesting. I buy things online all the time. I had no idea that I wasn't paying the sales tax. You add the shipping charges in, the price goes up substantially, and I figured the taxes were included in that. I'll bet you a lot of people thought that, too.
You're absolutely right. The majority of people don't realize that. Two things consumers understand. Retailer charges them the sales tax, or the retailer doesn't charge them the sales tax, mm-hmm. and it's the retailer's responsibility. That's the two things they understand. Either they do or they don't, but they know it's the retailer's responsibility.
Yeah. What kind of a mechanism would work to collect the taxes separately around the 50 states?
There's two ways of doing it, the easy way and the hard way.
Okay. And hard well, way if it's a government operation, it'll probably be the hard way.
Well, actually, the beauty of this thing is we're trying to have as little government involvement in this thing as is possible. We're trying to outsource every way it's possible to outsource this so that the private sector, which is where the majority of this is done already and where the real need is, has the lion's share of the responsibility because they can respond so much quicker.
Well,
today it's done by folks who either do it the hard way, mm-hmm. they do it, you know, on a piece of paper with a pencil, or like every other good business person, they're trying to automate everything they can.
Yeah.
And so they build the tax collection mechanism inside their cash register or inside their shopping cart.
Well, what is the objection to this?
There's a couple of objections. One, consumers that know they should be paying the sales tax but aren't think this is a new tax because they've been getting away with not paying the tax. The other objection, and I personally, I don't believe that's a valid objection because if you know you're supposed to pay the tax and you're not paying the tax, that kind of makes you a criminal, which, you know, this and what isn't anybody wants to talk about. But the other objection is that there are lots of businesses that don't collect sales tax on all their sales, and for that group of businesses, there's going to be an initial burden on them that they're going to have to overcome. They're going to have to figure out how to start collecting sales tax when they aren't collecting sales tax.
Is this a software fix for them, or is it something that's going to be very expensive to do?
It should be a software fix for all of those folks. Some it will be much simpler than others. If you're a retailer that started in the last 5 years and you make all your sales online, mm-hmm. every one of these shopping carts has the capacity to integrate a sales tax collection plug-in. If you're older than that, or if you have lots of different ways of making sales, if you have a store that runs on cash registers and you have a website that runs on really old software, and you have a 1-800 number that you've outsourced to some service, getting all three of those things to talk to each other can be a very complicated thing. But
yeah.
That's the problem today. If you call one of the big holding companies, you know, GE or Warren Buffett or anybody like that, and ask them how much they spend after they buy a company, making sure that the two companies' software systems talk to each other.
Yeah.
This is a big deal for businesses, it's a big deal for businesses because they have to do it every day
right.
for a dozen different reasons.
Okay. All right, this is Scott Peterson, the executive director of the Streamline Sales Tax Governing Board. Scott, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. On the way on America's Radio News, chemical weapons in Syria, what to do? We'll talk about that in depth. Also, Los Angeles has decided to ban medical marijuana dispensaries. And here's a person who collected welfare, then won the lottery, but kept collecting the welfare. The legal folks in Michigan didn't like that. She was sentenced yesterday. We'll talk about it. Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need is right here on America's Radio News. Journalism without agenda.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
Keeping you up to date with the latest breaking news right here on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown, and these are some of the stories that are coming up today on this Wednesday, July 25th.
This is the Second Amendment. You have a lawful and reasonable right to be able to go out and purchase weapons
the key is
ammunition.
I'm not saying you can't purchase. Report yes, to purchase
if
in
you're
case
buying,
it's a terrorist.
But Bill.
Arguments over gun control begin to heat up.
I know Los Angeles is a compassionate city, and I know the intelligence and the leadership can do a better job at leading.
Medical marijuana clinics are facing closure in Los Angeles.
I think people are concerned that they can't even go to a movie without possibly being in fear of their life.
Gun sales are up after the Colorado shooting. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Well, the House of Representatives has barred the Labor Secretary from imposing new safety rules for children working on farms, putting a legal stamp on a Labor Department decision to put off action on the rules. The Labor Department last April withdrew the proposed safety rules after being hit with a storm of protests from farm groups who said they'd have prevented young people from working on family-run farms. The department added that the rules would not be pursued for the duration of the Obama administration. But bill sponsor Representative Tom Latham, an Iowa Republican, said that even with that assurance, legislation was needed to make sure that federal bureaucrats would not carry through with what he called misguided regulatory attempts to prohibit children under 16 from working on the family farm. The Los Angeles City Council has voted to ban hundreds of medical marijuana dispensaries that have cropped up around the city. The council yesterday voted to rid the nation's second largest city of pot clinics that some residents have been have been a blight on neighborhoods. City officials estimate there could be more than 900 collectives that are open right now. Many cities have struggled with medical marijuana ordinances, but none has had a bigger problem than Los Angeles, where pot shops have proliferated. At one point, the city ordered closure of the shops, a process that failed amid lawsuits and conflicting rulings by appellate courts. The so-called gentle ban eliminates storefronts but allows patients and caregivers to grow medical marijuana. A Detroit-area woman who collected welfare despite winning a $735,000 lottery prize has been sentenced to probation. Attorney Todd Flood said Amanda Clayton repaid about $5,500 in food and medical benefits. The 24-year-old pleaded no contest to fraud last month and was placed on probation yesterday for 9 months. The Michigan Department of Human Services said Clayton didn't inform the state about her pre-tax lottery windfall of $735,000 last year. Flood said Clayton did make an attempt, but just decided not to fight the case and move on with her life. Governor Rick Snyder signed a law in April that requires lottery officials to tell the Department of Human Services about new winners. Fuad Ajami joins us. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institute. He's also author of The Syrian Rebellion. Fuad, thank you so much for joining us today. We sure appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Ernie. It's a pleasure.
You know, when I look at the situation in Syria, I think it was made a lot worse when we find out more about chemical weapons in that country and how they can be used. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, Ernie, I think this regime will do anything to survive. We have to understand that when we look at what Bashar al-Assad is doing, he has 27 torture centers for his people. He has used even air power against his own population. He does have stocks of chemical weapons. Who knows? Maybe some of them are the weapons that they once were in the hands of the Saddam regime, and perhaps they made it across the border to Syria. I think he might be careful because it's very important for Bashar al-Assad not to trigger foreign intervention. He prefers to stay under the radar. These chemical weapons will put him above the radar, and this will be some concern to him.
Did you believe when his, I think it was his foreign minister, said that they would only use them in case of foreign intervention?
Ernie, I don't believe anything this regime says. I think that perhaps they're the ones who began talking about chemical weapons in order to frighten their own people and to frighten the foreign world, to frighten the Turks nearby, to frighten the NATO powers, to frighten the Obama administration. And as we know, it's not that difficult to frighten the Obama administration. They've stayed clear from Syria.
How much power does this regime still have?
You know, I don't think it has any considerable amount of power. It has power when it is facing basically either these remnants of these few troops, the defectors who have joined the Free Syrian Army. They have power when they face protesters in Daraa and Hama. They don't have power if real foreign intervention were to materialize, if the cavalry, if you will, from abroad were to come to the rescue, if the United States were to set up, even to help the Turks set up safe zones, no-fly, no-drive zones on the Syria-Turkey border, the balance of power would shift. But in the interim, obviously, a regime built this way, built to terrorize people with its own security forces and the Alawi community of Bashar al-Assad still standing by him, he does have some power.
I do hear this a lot from military minds who say that this would not be an easy intervention for anybody militarily.
Yes. Well, you know, that's these kinds of arguments we have seen and heard before. Let's go back and consider Bosnia. People said, Bosnia would not be easier. The Serbs, they tied down 37 Nazi division in World War II. Guess what happened? We intervened in Bosnia. We destroyed the Serbian killer machine. We saved the Bosnians. Did we lose any soldiers? Not one. We heard the same arguments 4 years later about Kosovo. We intervened and saved the Kosovars from utter destruction. Were there any American casualties? Not at all. It was done by air power. The same arguments are always made. They were also made, by the way, about Libya in 2011, and those dire predictions did not materialize.
Is the Syrian army still firmly behind Assad?
You know, Ernie, that's a hard one. I think the killer brigades, the intelligence barons, the security forces, the units that are drawn from the Alawi community of the Assads, those are behind them. The poor recruits, who are mostly Sunnis like the rest of the country, given that the country is 75% Sunni, obviously that it would stand to reason that the recruits would be mostly Sunnis as well. They're terrified. They're frightened because they know that behind them are these political commissars who watch them. So, yes, he does have these loyal units to him because they stand or fall with him, these killer units. But the rank and file, they would be more than eager to desert this brutal man.
Is ultimately, do you think Assad will fall?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really, you know, to use the cliche, it's not a matter of if he will fall, but of when he will fall. It's Bashar al-Assad against the laws of gravity. More and more of his territory, more of the crossing points, that's really very important, the crossing points with Turkey, with Jordan, are being lost to him. And when you lose the crossing points, and also what's lost is the fear factor. The Syrian people have conquered their fear, and they are even ashamed of having submitted to this breed for 4 decades. They're done with that regime. They just simply now need the help and the energy and the weapons and the money to topple this regime.
And we have a minute left. What about those weapons if he does fall, those chemical weapons and the other ones as well?
I don't have this enormous concern with the chemical weapons that other observers are really now seem to be prone to. I think the torture centers are more important than chemical weapons. Yes, the chemical weapons will have to be secured, and is he going to give them to Hezbollah in Lebanon? I don't think it's easy to hand over these kinds of weapons this way.
This is Fuad Ajami, senior fellow at the Hoover Institute, author of The Syrian Rebellion. Thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Ernie. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. At the International Desk, here's Mike Mortensen now.
Let the games begin. Big Ben is going to be ringing in a big way this Friday. Londoners will hear the bell toll some 40 times for 3 minutes. It's to celebrate the first day of the London Olympics. Organizers say it's believed to be the first time that Big Ben has been rung outside its regular schedule since 1952. Thousands of other bells are also set to sound across Britain. Everyday folks are also being encouraged to chime in. They can ring their own bells or use an app that was actually created just for the occasion. For America's Radio News, I'm Mike Mortensen.
Coming up, names and faces from 1970s television are gone. We'll tell you who. Also, a woman facing charges for sending fake anthrax letters to a couple of senators. And a $60 million fine against Penn State will be used for a good cause. Keeping you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News.
Everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
And this is where the nation's news breaks on America's Radio News. It's 11 before the top of the hour. This is Ernie Brown. Firearm sales surging in the wake of the Colorado movie theater massacre as buyers expressing fears that anti-gun politicians might use the shootings to seek new restrictions on owning weapons. In Colorado, the site of Friday's shooting that killed 12 and injured dozens of others, gun sales jumped in the 3 days that followed. Numbers also show a bump in places like Florida, Oregon, California, and Seattle's home county of King. Shop owners say customers are concerned that lawmakers might try to push through an anti-gun agenda in response to the shooting, which killed 12 people and wounded dozens of others. Others are interested in making sure they're able to protect themselves if they ever find themselves in a similar situation. A court-backed plan to excise corruption, discrimination, and a frequent use of deadly force from the long-troubled New Orleans Police Department will last at least 4 years and likely cost the financially strapped city $11 million a year. Attorney General Eric Holder announced the plan yesterday. He said the agreement is the most wide-ranging in the Justice Department's history. He said it resolves allegations that the New Orleans police officers have engaged in a pattern of discriminatory and unconstitutional activity. It comes in the form of a court-approved consent decree. The Justice Department negotiated the decree with the city after releasing a scathing report taking the department to task on multiple fronts about a year and a half ago. The agreement includes extensive requirements for improved training, better supervision, and new technology. Sherman Hemsley, the actor who made the bigoted George Jefferson of the Jeffersons one of the most memorable characters in television history and a symbol for urban upward mobility, he's passed away. He was 74 years old. Police in El Paso, Texas said late yesterday he was found dead at his home there. The cause of death is pending. The Philadelphia-born Hemsley played the blustering black Harlem businessman on CBS's All in the Family before he was spun off onto the Jeffersons. That show ran 11 years. Later on, he starred in a sitcom called Amen. And if you remember the TV show Medical Center, well, here's the star of that show back in the 70s who went on to appear in such films and shows like Mulholland Drive and Melrose Place has died. Chad Everett was 75. Everett's daughter said he died yesterday at his home in Los Angeles after a year and a half battle with lung cancer. His acting career spanned 40 years, included guest starring roles on TV series like The Love Boat, Murder, She Wrote, and Without a Trace. He most recently appeared in the TV show Castle. His film credits include The Jigsaw Murders, The Fire Chasers, and Gus Van Sant's Psycho. Well, the Senate's ready for a tax cut showdown that's all about Democrats and Republicans showing voters the differences over taxing the well-off and blaming the other side for threatening to push the government over a fiscal cliff. Senators plan to vote on the $250 billion Democratic measure to extend expiring tax cuts next year for everybody but the highest earners. Democrats need 60 votes to advance the proposal. They don't have them. It seemed unlikely that there would be a separate vote on the GOP bill extending everybody's tax cuts. That would also lose. If the two sides don't compromise, $600 billion in tax increases and spending cuts for 2013 would be triggered, the so-called fiscal cliff, which analysts say would jar an already weak economy. Well, I don't know if you remember Gary Johnson or not. He is still running for president. He's the former New Mexico governor, started out as a Republican, now running, as an independent, the Libertarian candidate. He has 5% in the polls, but if he can get those numbers up to about 15%, he'll be able to participate in the upcoming debates with Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. Here he is talking about it on Fox News.
That has been put to the test with the polling that they have done. And in some states, I take more votes away from Obama. In other states, I take more votes away from Romney. So it bears out what we've thought all along. I'm going to take equally from both sides, and then I'm going to take from a group in the middle that ordinarily don't vote. And what I'm trying to tap into right now is the fact that there are more people in this country that call themselves libertarian than vote libertarian. So I'm asking everybody in that category to actually vote libertarian with me this one time, and let's really try and make a change. The only scenario under which I win is if I'm actually in the debates. Of course, that could be crash and burn. That might be a lot of attention. I would be the only candidate that doesn't want to bomb Iran. I'd be the only candidate that wants to get out of Afghanistan, bring the troops home now. I'd be the only candidate that wants to repeal the Patriot Act. I wouldn't have signed the National Defense Authorization Act. I hope I'm on stage, because otherwise I don't know if it ends up being a debate.
Political tensions in the Middle East remain high in the wake of last week's bombing in Bulgaria that killed five Israelis. The Israeli president, Shimon Peres, blamed Iran and Hezbollah for the bombings and claimed that Iran's making open war with Israel. Here he is talking about it on CNN.
It's self-evident. Look, the use of chemical weapons is internationally forbidden. You don't have the right to produce them. We ourselves signed this international law. You don't have the right to use them. And what do you do when somebody violates the law? You fight against it. You stop them. My lady, we are not in a shadow war. It's an open war of Iran against Israel. Israel is not threatening Iran. Iran is threatening Israel. It's not a war. It's an one-sided attack.
And then there's the issue of Syria. The Israeli president said he'll go to any length to prevent refugees from entering into that country, even resulting in the use of force if necessary.
We shall prevent them. I mean, you don't go straight to the rifle. There are other means to prevent them. We shall prevent it, because it will be a double tragedy for them and for us. They will become homeless, and we shall become defenseless.
And then we go to Donald Rumsfeld. This is in wake of what Shimon Peres said about the open war with Iran. He said the Israelis aren't presently inclined to trust the U.S. right now, particularly this administration, for fear that information on any attack Israel might engage in, hypothetically, would be leaked.
What I have said is that we have seen repeated leaks out of this administration. Leaks with respect to Stuxnet. Leaks with respect to the way the Special Operations Forces engaged with respect to the attack on Osama bin Laden. Leaks with respect to a doctor who may or may not have provided some assistance with respect to that, a Pakistani. And I was asked the question, do I think that the Israelis would contact the United States government if they planned to engage in an attack on Iran? And my response was, I think they would be very careful about doing that for fear that it would leak out of the administration. I did not say that the president would leak it. I did not say that it would be intentional to damage them. What I said was exactly what I just said.
Well, Mitt Romney said yesterday the president has a shabby relationship with Israel. Former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. John Bolton had some thoughts on that on Fox News.
This is the most hostile president since the state of Israel was created. He's demonstrated that hostility right from the beginning of his administration. Those speeches Governor Romney referred to at the United Nations going back to September of 2009, where he laid out his view that Israel should be confined to the 1967 boundaries, really the 1949 ceasefire lines, unless the Palestinians agreed to land swaps. This has been very, very restrictive on Israel, and it has cost the United States and Israel and its Arab friends in the region.
Numbers on Wall Street right now, the Dow is up 22 points. The NASDAQ is down 21 points. And the S&P 500 is up about, or down rather, about 6 or so. Oil's picked up about 3 cents a barrel right now, selling a little bit over $90 a barrel. Christian Bale visits some of the shooting victims in Colorado. Health care and housing, big expenditures in the federal budget. And protesters versus police in Anaheim over a police shooting. We'll cover it all for you coming up. News from around the world and across the nation right here on America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchor, Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news on America's Radio News. Six after the top of the hour, here are some of the stories I'm following for you on this Wednesday morning.
Now, you know that's what he meant, because when he goes in that funny talk cadence of his, you know he's going to introduce class warfare. And that's what he did with that statement.
Out of context or right on the money, the campaign arguments continue.
Because what they thought was right in 1776 to 1789, that is the way we have to live today in the 21st century.
Michael Moore thinks the Constitution may be out of date.
That has been put to the test with the polling that they have done. And in some states, I take more votes away from Obama. In other states, I take more votes away from Romney. So it bears out what we've thought all along.
There's a third choice in the presidential race. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Syria's second largest city, Aleppo, the setting of intense fighting this week as thousands of Syrian soldiers are being taken off their Turkey border post to join the battle against the rebels there. President Bashar al-Assad's forces have avoided a rebel takeover of Damascus by diverting the violence to that other city, the first time fighting has hit either major city since turmoil began last year. Military helicopters have been reportedly bombing some parts of Damascus, despite the government apparently retaking control of that city. The government is even deploying fighter jets over Aleppo, Syria's commercial center, for the first time since the violence began last year. Retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor says attacks on Chief Justice John Roberts over his key vote to uphold President Obama's health care overhaul are unfortunate. O'Connor said at a Senate committee hearing of that criticism of Roberts as a traitor to conservative ideals reflects a lack of understanding of the federal judiciary. The 82-year-old former justice was responding to questions from Democratic senators who has been promoting civics education since her retirement in 2006. She testified about the value of educating American school children about how their government works. Pieces of the infamous flying saucer that starred in Colorado's Balloon Boy hoax are now available as trading cards. Michael Fruitman, the current owner of the balloon, struck a deal with New York-based sports and entertainment card company Topps to use a segment of the Mylar saucer for individual trading cards. The Loveland Reporter Herald reports the cards are included in the recently released 2012 Topps Baseball Allen and Ginter Relic set. The silver UFO-like helium balloon gripped the country's attention back in 2009 when Richard Heaney and their six-year-old son had floated away in it. The parents were charged when it was discovered the boy was never on board, and they were ordered to pay $36,000 in restitution. The Heaneys live in Fort Collins at the time. They've moved to Florida. Fruitman said he acquired the balloon from the couple's California attorney. He paid about $2,500 for it at an auction. Technology giant Microsoft reported quarterly losses for the first time in 26 years. Well, with all the competition in the tech industry, how is Microsoft faring? That question asked of founder and chairman of the board, Bill Gates, on CNN.
Well, obviously, the tech industry is very competitive, and Microsoft over the last 3 years has been working on products that are just coming out now. And so something like that is always a bit backwards looking. Are there products that Microsoft has done super well on? Absolutely. Xbox, Office. Are there products other companies have done super well on? Yeah, absolutely. It's a great field. It's a great field to be a customer in. but now with the breakthrough in Bing, the quality of the search, being the best, the Surface, Office version that just came out, Windows 8, it'll be great to see. That's why, the tech industry is so amazing, and Microsoft is a huge contributor.
He also said on CNN that an accounting issue is the reason behind the second quarter loss for Microsoft.
Well, the actual cash was many, many billions of dollars. There's an accounting thing that led to that sort of one-time thing. So I don't think you should read too much into it. Microsoft, on a financial basis, a research basis, is a phenomenally strong company. Big companies with big R&D budgets need to be very ambitious. And ironically, most people talk about what you miss, not that you're doing too much. The magic of software shows itself in a broad set of ways. And the primary products get almost all the resources.
And then we go to Mitt Romney on the campaign trail speaking to the VFW yesterday.
It's not enough to say the matter is being looked into and just leave it at that. When the issue was the political use of highly sensitive national security information, it's unacceptable to say we'll report our findings after the election. Exactly who in the White House betrayed these secrets? Did a superior authorize it? These are things that Americans are entitled to know, and they're entitled to know it now. If the president believes, as he said last week, that the buck stops with him, then he owes all Americans a full and prompt accounting of the facts. And let me be very clear. These events make the decision we face in November all the more important. What kind of White House would reveal classified material for political gain? I'll tell you right now, mine will not.
Well, boxing used to be the only sport that didn't allow females to compete at the Olympics, but at the London Olympics this year, that's going to change. The glass ceiling for female boxers has been broken. At the 2012 Olympics, female boxer like Marlon Esparza can compete for the first time in history. Here she is talking about that on CNN.
When you beat somebody in the ring, you're not just beating them up or something. You're like beating the entire symbolism of them. You're beating who they are. This is my life and this is what I do. Like, and I can honestly say, like, this is who I am. Like right here, you're with it, you see it, this is what I do.
The Olympics is a goal, big goal.
Yeah, it's huge. It's probably, I honestly truly feel like if I go to the Olympics and medal, that I could probably be totally happy for the rest of my life. Yeah, like completely happy. The Mexicans are totally going to love it. They're going to freak when it happens. I think, like, the atmosphere and the energy is just going to be, like, something I've never felt. And I think that's one of the main things that I'm kind of looking forward to. I think that's really going to put me over the top and ready to compete.
Coming up on America's Radio News, challenging yourself to be more. We'll talk about that. The NYPD, they were outed by a building superintendent who found their lookout post. Also, Apple doesn't meet sales expectations, but they still did quite well. This is where the nation's news breaks. It's America's Radio News.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. And always informative. This is America's Radio News.
News from around the world and across the nation, always found right here on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown, 20 minutes after the top of the hour. The head of the National Counterterrorism Center says Al-Qaeda isn't as capable as it once was, but terrorists are focused on smaller, simpler plots against the United States. Director Matthew Olson tells Congress that U.S. authorities are worried about homegrown violent extremists who are influenced by surviving Al-Qaeda leaders. And testimony prepared for a hearing before the House Homeland Security Committee today, Olson said lone actors or insular groups pose the most serious homegrown threat. Olson does not mention the Colorado movie theater incident that killed 12 people last week. The motive in that attack is still unknown. The director also tells lawmakers that national counterterrorism centers are working with the U.S. intelligence and British authorities on security issues around the London Olympics. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney's campaign is asking Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli of Virginia to launch an investigation into voter registration forms that are being sent to residents and addressed to deceased relatives, children, pets, and others ineligible to vote. The errant mailings from the Washington-based nonprofit group Voter Participation Center have befuddled many Virginia residents, leading to hundreds of complaints. The organization has been mass mailing the forms, pre-populated with key information like names and addresses to primarily Democratic-leaning vote blocks. In a letter to Cuccinelli's office and State Board of Elections, Catherine Bieber says that she wants an investigation into the matter by law enforcement officials, claiming that the mailings appear to violate at least one and maybe several Virginia laws aimed at ensuring a fair election. Batman star Christian Bale is in Colorado visiting victims of the shooting at a theater showing The Dark Knight Rises. A Warner Brothers spokeswoman told the Denver Post that Bale is representing himself, not the movie studio. Kerry Rodman, one of the 58 people injured in Friday's shooting, posted two photographs of himself with Bale on his Facebook page. Hospital staff also posted a Facebook photo of Bale with some of the staff members. There's been an online campaign urging him to visit the victims of the shooting, which also killed 12 people. Some of the survivors have been receiving hospital visits from President Obama and members of the Denver Broncos as well. Brendan Burchard joins us. He's the founder of High Performance Academy and the author of the number one New York Times and number one USA Today best-selling book, The Millionaire Messenger. Also has a new book called The Charge, Activating the 10 Human Drives That Make You Feel Alive. Brendan, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me about some of the things we do to meet our human drives. This is what I thought was interesting, that a lot of things we think we're doing that are right are actually counterproductive.
Yeah, well, a lot of us think that if we just meet our human needs, you know, meet our basic needs for sustenance and safety and shelter and stuff, we're going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
But we all find eventually that there's something deeper within us that needs to be activated for us to feel happy and to feel alive and productive. And those things are our human drives. And our drives for things like self-control and social belonging, the big picture types of things. And then our forward drives are bigger drives for things like self-actualization and social contribution. And it's more of those intrinsic types of things that make us feel like we're moving alive or moving ahead in life and feeling alive.
You know, it's interesting. I know more people who will say that they don't feel like they're getting anywhere, that they just go to work, they go home, they do whatever they have to do at home, they run errands on the weekend, that they feel like they're not progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where their forward drives aren't being activated, right? So they've got control in their life because they've got their routine. And control is one of our human drives.
Yeah.
But on the forward side of our drives, we also have to have that drive for creative expression and contribution and change and challenge. And those are the ones that make us feel really lit up and alive.
You know, a lot of people find very great comfort in routine, though.
They do. And comfort's great.
Yeah.
But comfort is not happiness.
Right? But you hear that comfortable rut that mm-hmm. people get in. And a lot of folks, they would like the idea. They see visualizations of it in a movie or a television program or a commercial. Oh, look at that, the beach. Oh, look at that, the guy skydiving. I'd love to do that, but I'm okay.
Right. That seems adventurous and that seems fun, but I'm good. But over the course of their lives, they don't feel good. And sometimes deep skills or deep routines, they lead to deep emotional ruts. And we know from neuroscience and psychology that things like novelty and challenge, those things that push us beyond our own current knowledge, skills, or abilities, those are the very things that make us feel most alive. So we should schedule our life and build our activities around those things.
How do you know, though, what those things would be that would make any difference, or they're just another distraction that you're adding to your rut?
Yeah, that's a great point, because distraction is not happiness, as we all know now with the online world.
Yeah.
Right? That what we have to do is figure out, well, which are the things that we can do in our lives that are not only progressing us, but activating all of our forward drives, the drives for change and challenge, creative expression, contribution, and consciousness. So we can go and run and do the next fancy, flashy thing, but if it doesn't make us feel like we're contributing socially or that we are better managing our own conscious mind, it's not really going to give the payback that we want.
Now, when you say contributing socially, what do you mean?
Well, you know, one of the things we all want to know is that at the end of our lives, that we made a difference,
yeah.
That we mattered. And most of us know that, but we don't build our lives strategically around that understanding. The whole argument in the charge is just that, is that many of these things we know we should do, we just haven't activated them. And contributing to the world in the way, not just of what we give, but how we give of ourselves, of showing up fully in the world as who we uniquely are, that's a unique contribution in itself. And when we know we're doing that, we know we're making a difference.
In other words, you try to be more memorable, try to be a memorable person by your actions or
that's
just
right.
by your personality.
And, you know, one of our drives is also the drive for congruence, to live a life that's congruent and has integrity
mm-hmm.
with who we know we are and who we know we can be for our families. If you're a parent and you know you're not being the most excellent parent that you can be, that drags on you emotionally. And it's not about guilting people into feeling bad like they're not good enough parents. It is encouraging them to say, you know what, let's set the standard for ourselves to be exceptional at whatever we are doing.
The book is called The Charge, Activating the 10 Human Drives That Make You Feel Alive. This is Brendan Burchard. Brendan, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
It's been an honor. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Coming up on America's Radio News, there's a little bit of a dispute between the U.S. and Mexico over the border fence. That $60 million fine against Penn State is going to be used for a good cause. The Colorado shooter, he's still in solitary confinement, and he'll probably be staying there for a while. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 42 points, NASDAQ down 11, S&P 500 down about 3. Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need is right here on America's Radio News, Journalism Without Agenda.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Down. We dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
27 minutes before the top of the hour on America's Radio News. This is Ernie Brown with these stories coming up for you this morning.
Now, you know that's what he meant, because when he goes in that funny talk cadence of his, you know he's going to introduce class warfare. And that's what he did with that statement.
Out of context or right on the money, the campaign arguments continue.
Because what they thought was right in 1776 to 1789, that is the way we have to live today in the 21st century.
Michael Moore thinks the Constitution may be out of date.
That has been put to the test with the polling that they have done. And in some states, I take more votes away from Obama. In other states, I take more votes away from Romney. So it bears out what we've thought all along.
There's a third choice in the presidential race. We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Well, consumers are buying cheaper Apple products. That's a disappointment for investors who thought the company would keep boosting profits and revenues at a previous breakneck pace. Well, yesterday, Apple revealed that both revenue and net income posted increases of about 20%. That's cause for celebration in most companies, but not very good by Apple standards. The growth was the slowest in more than 2 years and failed to meet analyst expectations. It wasn't so much the volume of sales that disappointed. Apple sold 17 million iPads in the last quarter, beating expectations, 26 million iPhones at the low end of expectations. But Apple's average selling price for the gadgets declined to levels last seen in 2010 for the iPhone and the lowest levels ever in the case of the iPad. People were just buying the cheaper versions of the products. Apple shares fell about 5% in after-hours trading. It's made a little bit of a comeback today, though. A former Internet poker company employee who returned to the United States from Costa Rica to face charges that he helped process illegal gambling proceeds has been sentenced to a year and 2 months in prison. Brent Beckley was sentenced Monday in federal court in Manhattan. The federal judge says prison time was necessary to send a message to others that a casual attitude about breaking laws to help businesses has consequences. Beckley told the judge he was truly sorry for thinking he could continue working in the online poker business after the U.S. changed its gambling laws. Beckley was permitted to wait to report to prison until October 1st. He has to forfeit $300,000 and pay a $3,000 fine. The prosecution has forced three large online poker companies to shut down U.S. operations. The nation's governors are asking Congress to help states recover an estimated $20 billion in sales taxes that go uncollected by out-of-state online merchants every year. Tennessee Governor James Haslam told the House Judiciary Committee that it's not fair to local businesses to exempt online purchases from state sales tax. Haslam said affordable computer software now makes it easy for even the smallest merchants to collect and forward sales taxes. Other Republican governors like Chris Christie of New Jersey have endorsed a bill to make out-of-state internet merchants charge and collect state taxes. An executive director of NetChoice, a coalition of e-commerce companies, said the bill doesn't simplify the process of collecting and distributing taxes enough to avoid imposing a pretty big burden on small businesses. John Hayward joins us. He writes for Human Events on America's Radio News, the latest happening on the campaign trail. John, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, Mitt Romney had a speech to the VFW. It looks like he's trying to put out some foreign policy ideas.
Yeah, this is an interesting speech he gave. He quoted Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and she had said the previous day that she thought the leaks were originating from the Obama White House. The White House has been leaking information for political purposes to the media that should be classified secure information. Romney mentioned that, and by the end of that day, Feinstein was marched out in front of cameras to walk back her comments and say that she didn't really said what she said and she didn't mean what she said and so forth. So the whole thing was a really embarrassing sort of political explosion for the White House, I think.
Why go foreign policy when it seems pretty obvious from polls that people are worried about the economy?
Well, that's definitely true, but I think foreign policy is out there, too. People have to address that. The downfall of many a candidate has been their inability or unwillingness to address foreign policy, even when it's not on the hot seat. It's one of those things voters expect some degree of confidence and ideas about. That was one of the reasons Herman Cain got in so much trouble. When it came to foreign policy, he just wasn't very good at it, and his star quickly faded.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you look really at who runs for office, who does have foreign policy experience unless they've been in an office that specifically dealt with it. Most people who run are they're governors or are senators, and the reality is they don't deal really that much with foreign policy.
And you can recall a history throughout various election contests of people trying to get over that. Like Bill Clinton at one point had said that his foreign policy experience as governor was mobilizing the Arkansas National Guard. Sarah Palin said something about her gubernatorial experience relating to foreign policy. That's always a hurdle they've got to climb because there really is no rough equivalent to the experience of the president in matters of foreign policy.
All right, so where does this campaign go? I had a poll earlier this week that said that some more people were trusting Mitt Romney to make good decisions about the economy than the president. Then we have a poll today that said the president's ahead of Mitt Romney by 6 points. Do polls mean anything right now?
Polls are always in flux and in transit. The sample matters a lot. The poll you mentioned, it had Obama 6 points ahead. That was an NBC poll that oversampled Democrats by about 9%, so it's meaningless and useless. I think the actual race is pretty much dead even. I think pretty much everybody that's running real polls sees that. And at the moment, it's a point of transition. People have decided they don't really care for the incumbent. They're looking to vote against him, but they're not sold on Romney. The deal is not closed, and they're waiting to hear more from him, and you wouldn't expect that process to begin in earnest until after the convention. So we're all pretty much in a holding pattern waiting for the conventions to hit.
And the next big thing would be the announcement of the vice presidential candidate?
That probably will be the next big thing, probably right before the convention. There was a little boomlet of speculation that he would make the announcement early, but there's really no reason to do that. As long as your vice presidency is up in the air, it means you have multiple people out there being paid attention to by the media as likely prospects. And if you pick one person, all those other people lose that attention. There's really no political plus to naming your vice president early in an environment like this.
Are there any big names that Mitt Romney could choose that would really lift the ticket, or is he going for just somebody who can be there to balance it out, or what's he looking for?
I think from what we've seen of the various polls conducted so far, even in the swing states, there's no one person that really changes the game completely, and I think there really usually isn't. That's sort of a fable that we have about the vice presidency, that one person will be picked that will make a gigantic difference. Sarah Palin probably made more of a difference in the McCain campaign than almost any other vice president has, but they usually don't completely upset the apple cart or change the game in a big way. I think he's looking for someone that's going to burnish his credentials, fit well with his ticket, and give him an advantage in one of the swing states, one of the places where it's important to have some influence. But those swing states are such swing states, they're so tight, that I don't think one person really tips any of them completely into one column or the other.
And the number one issue for the campaign will be the economy, you think?
Oh, no doubt about it. I think other things have to be addressed, and people are looking for other things to be addressed. But it's no secret that they're all very focused on the economy right now. That's what's driving the conversation, and attempts to distract them with other matters have been temporary at best. Everything that takes them away from the economy is a matter of a couple of days, a news cycle, and then we're back to the economy.
And there seems to be a lot of those little things cropping up, the little distracting type things that are going to have no play whatsoever, but all an attempt to try to focus negativity on a candidate.
I think some of it's deliberate from the Obama campaign, and some of it is just stuff that happens. Things happen in the news, and when something major happens in the news, like the tragic shooting out in Colorado, that atrocity out there, that dominates people's thinking for a few days. It is a big deal, and people do pay attention to it. But with a presidential election approaching, thoughts turn back to the underlying issues always in a matter of time.
John Hayward writes for Human Events. John, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
At the National Desk, here's Greg Moore.
Congress may launch an investigation into why Army leaders have so far resisted requests to provide battlefield units with a specific computer program that helps troops locate and clear roadside bombs. The software is being used by some units in Afghanistan, but Army officials have denied multiple requests for it from others, including a May memo from the 1st Brigade, 82nd Airborne Division, that cited a, quote, urgent need for it in the volatile eastern province of Ghazni. Representative Duncan Hunter, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, has asked the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform to look into the matter. Army officials say they have also begun an investigation. For America's Radio News, I'm Greg Moore.
Coming up on America's Radio News, names and faces from 1970s television are gone. We'll tell you who. Also, intense fighting in Syria moves away from Damascus, and the Congressional Budget Office said the health care ruling could save a little bit of money. News from around the world and across the nation, all right here on America's Radio News, coming up.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news, so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News. Everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
Covering the United States and the world on America's Radio News, this is Ernie Brown. It's 11 before the top of the hour. I appreciate you joining me. It's Wednesday, July 25th. That blistering report about Penn State's handling of the Jerry Sandusky sex abuse scandal contained seven errors that have been corrected by the company hired to investigate the school. None of the changes made to the report compiled by a team led by former FBI Director Louis Free altered the central findings, which accused school officials of covering up the abuse to avoid bad publicity. The corrections to the report released 2 weeks ago include date changes to section headers and details of a person's employment with a children's charity founded by Sandusky. They also changed attribution for comments about a campus police investigation of Sandusky back in 1998, and it fixes a couple of other minor things. Sandusky awaits sentencing after being convicted of 45 criminal counts of child sexual abuse. Well, police in Anaheim, California, they have restored order after a violent protest over weekend police shooting caused injuries and 24 arrests. As many as 500 protesters and 250 police were involved in a fourth night of violence last night. 7 hours of confrontations ended about 2 o'clock this morning. Sergeant Bob Dunn said an initially peaceful protest evolved into clusters of people throwing rocks at police, lighting trash cans on fire, and one who threw a Molotov cocktail at a police car and smashed windows and businesses. Police used beanbag rounds and pepper balls. Dunn said 20 adults and 4 minors were arrested. He said a police officer, 2 members of the media, and some protesters were injured, but nobody was hospitalized. A Detroit-area woman who collected welfare despite winning a $735,000 lottery prize has been sentenced to probation. Attorney Todd Flood said Amanda Clayton has repaid about $5,500 in food aid and medical benefits. The 24-year-old pleaded no contest to fraud last month and was placed on probation yesterday for about 9 months. The Michigan Department of Human Services said Clayton didn't inform the state about her pre-tax lottery windfall of $735,000 last year. Flood said Clayton made an attempt but decided not to fight the case and just move on with her life. Governor Rick Snyder signed a law in April that requires lottery officials to tell the Department of Human Services about new winners. Well, the star of the 1970s TV series Medical Center, who went on to appear in such films and shows as Mulholland Drive and Melrose Place, has died. Chad Everett was 75 years old. He'd been battling lung cancer for the last year and a half. Also, yesterday, Sherman Hemsley, the actor who made George Jefferson a household name, the Jeffersons television show, also on All in the Family. That's a show he was on television as George Jefferson for about 16 years. He became one of TV's most successful sitcoms. He passed away. He was living in El Paso. He was 74 years old yesterday. Firearm sales surging in the wake of the Colorado movie theater massacre as buyers expressing fears that anti-gun politicians may use the shootings to seek new restrictions on owning weapons. Well, in Colorado, the site of Friday's shooting that killed 12 and injured dozens of others, gun sales jumped in the 3 days that followed. Numbers also show a bump in places like Seattle, Oregon, California, and Florida. Shop owners say customers are concerned that lawmakers might try to push this anti-gun agenda through. Others are interested in making sure that if they're in that situation, that they can protect themselves. A new program being launched to train thousands of social workers on how to aid troops coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. First Lady Michelle Obama's Joining Forces campaign says the training will help workers spot problems like post-traumatic stress disorder and substance abuse and the danger signs for homelessness and suicide. Mrs. Obama's partner in the campaign, Jill Biden, the vice president's wife, said social workers are uniquely positioned to help vets and military families. The program, being run by a leading union, includes online courses and new standards in credentialing. It's being offered to 650,000 social workers. Well, Congressman Jason Chaffetz did battle with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News last night over the issue of gun purchasing. Here's a little bit of that.
If the FBI is alerted that somebody's buying 60,000 heavy-duty rounds, they're going to check it out because that's what anti-terrorism is. That's what they do.
Bill, that's why we have the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We have a specially designated law enforcement officer
that kid's purchase
that
on the internet wasn't reported to any federal agency. That's why he was able to assemble that armor that he had. And you're telling me you object to this? This doesn't intrude on any hunter, anybody with a handgun to protect himself.
This is the Second Amendment. You have a lawful and reasonable right to be able to go out and purchase
ammunition. I'm not saying you can't purchase. Report the purchase in case it's a terrorist.
But Bill, you're ignoring the current law on the books. You're coming up with this wild definition of what is so-called heavy armament.
An AK-47?
Yes, you are.
That's not heavy armor? An AK?
There are rules, but there are laws on the books. You act as
there
if you can...
There aren't any federal laws on the books
there
to report that.
There are laws on the books.
No,
you
there
are
aren't.
Misinformed.
There are seven
are
states
totally
that require... No, you're wrong.
Yes,
there are seven
are.
States that require if you buy an AK and 43 that don't. Come on!
And then we go to CNN's Piers Morgan's program last night. Michael Moore is on there, and he's talking about, when it comes to guns, perhaps the Constitution's out of date.
This must seem odd to people in other countries that we view our Constitution as if it was written by God himself, that it was somehow through some sort of divine intervention or whatever, it was etched in stone like Moses in the tablets, and because what they thought was right in 1776 to 1789, that is the way we have to live today in the 21st century. I mean, we wouldn't go to a doctor and have him put leeches on us to suck the blood out of us because that would cure us. That's what they did, 150 years ago. We kind of evolve. I wish we would just live in this century. I think they'd want us to do that. We've evolved in other ways. We allowed women to vote. We decided that slavery was a bad idea. We've gotten rid of a lot of those bad ideas from the founding fathers.
And then on CNBC, we have Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma differing with the president on whether or not his economic plans have worked.
The final report on the stimulus bill was it had a negative multiplier of 0.95. What that means is it actually hurt the economy by 0.5%, and now we're $800 billion more in debt from it. So that didn't work. Number two is we subsidized all the state and city and county and local governments with that stimulus plan and just delayed a year of the hard choices they had to make. They are now making those choices, and we're seeing the consequences of that. You can talk about health care if you want. What we've done is raise taxes on 22 different instances on people in American healthcare purchasers, and the average policy has gone up an additional $500 per year for the average family in this country and corporately. So I'm not sure it worked. I know they had good intentions. What works is freedom and liberty and limited government, and that's not what we have.
At the International Desk on America's Radio News, here's Mike Mortensen.
Let the games begin. Big Ben is going to be ringing in a big way this Friday. Londoners will hear the bell toll some 40 times for 3 minutes. It's to celebrate the first day of the London Olympics. Organizers say it's believed to be the first time that Big Ben has been rung outside its regular schedule since 1952. Thousands of other bells are also set to sound across Britain. Everyday folks are also being encouraged to chime in. They can ring their own bells or use an app that was actually created just for the occasion. For America's Radio News, I'm Mike Mortensen.
On Wall Street, the Dow is up 43.5 points. The NASDAQ is down 10. The S&P 500 off about 3 points or so. Thanks for joining me this morning. We'll do it again tomorrow, live from Washington, D.C., always with the information you need. This is Ernie Brown on America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headline when we come back to America's Radio News.